always look forward to chatting up our next guest just to find out what he's up to, if it's another film, a book, a tale of surfing, or breaking it down for the Pac-12 Network. You can follow him on Twitter. The handle is at Yogi Roth. Yogi, how are things, my friend?
They're so good, man. They're so good. National signing day is done. Now it's like laundry, clean my place, you know, kind of surf a ton, go into hibernation, you know, get creative for a little bit, and then come back out for spring ball.
Now, another of your projects, the Life Without Limits podcast. So kind of a quick two-parter. How are you liking that? What could you tell us about one of your recent guests who you said is running a marathon a day covering all seven continents?
Yeah, it's amazing. He just finished, and I'm actually going to interview him tonight because he just got back to the Portland community. You should have him on your show. His name is Jared Blank. He's phenomenal. He's a guy who was the director of football operations at USC and the University of Washington, and kind of had the dream job that so many people had. You know, there's so many people wanted in the college football community. And he just one day said, you know what, I need to chase my dream and follow my passion. That's exactly what he did. So he quit his job and decided he was going to run seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents, as he referenced, called the World Marathon Challenge. And he wanted to do it to raise awareness for dyslexia, because when he was 10 years old, he was told he'd never graduate high school. And Jared graduated high school. He graduated undergrad at SC, got two master's degrees, has absolutely crushed it in his life, and he finished the race, which is fascinating. You can follow him online. He's an amazing follow on social media or his website, and it's an inspirational guy.
You know, I got to be honest, it took me a couple minutes to figure out what the seventh continent was. He's running a marathon on all of them. Amazing. So, huge week for college football. You mentioned LOI Day. I'm always curious. You went to high school in Northeast Pennsylvania, then went to Pitt. What do you remember, I guess now that's like half your life ago, about going through that recruiting process yourself as a player?
Yeah, I remember, you know, it was such a different world.
Oh,
we talked about it yesterday a lot on the Pac-12 Network, if you got a chance to watch. We entered a different era, not only with two signing days, but because of the social media influence of how to recruit. You know, Stanford literally sent out an advertisement for a fullback on Twitter, and they got a kid to decommit from Pitt and flip out of the Boston community and sign at Stanford. And then you've got some players like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's got 30,000 Instagram followers, and it was just featured on HBO Real Sports. I mean, that didn't happen in my era. You were, you know, internet was just getting going. You were trying to email people. You were dubbing VHS tapes every night. But the excitement, anticipation was still there because you work your tail off to get the opportunity to play major college football. And for me, my signing day was disappointing because everyone that I was on backed out. You know, I'd committed to Princeton. They fired their coach. And I was kind of up in the air, and Pitt was there. They liked me, but offered me just to walk on, and I knew the receiver that they signed, and I thought I was better than him. And I was like, okay, I'll come walk on. And then after a couple weeks of training camp, I was playing as a true freshman, and the rest is kind of history as I got a scholarship. So for me, I always think about the other side of this day. It's a beautiful one, and it is that dream that everybody gets to achieve, and some people don't get it. And to me, that's why I cherish the game so much, because I think it's such a gift.
It's a great story. Talking with Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. Now, you mentioned there was the early signing period in December, traditional day yesterday. What's your read on this? Is there any edge for the bigger programs? Is it negligible? What do you make of that additional December signing day?
I think it's both ways, to be honest with you, Steve. I think there's beautiful elements to it, because if I'm a quarterback and I'm Tyler Shuck, for instance, who went to Oregon, I know where I want to go. I want to sign. Let's just go do this thing. And that's great. And you can go do that. But I think there's a lot of unintended consequences that have come from this that the NCAA wasn't prepared for and the coaching community wasn't ready for. You know, the obvious one is what happened in Arizona. You lose your coach after signing 16 players on December 20th, and are they binded to that agreement? And they are right now. You know, the NCAA is going to probably change that rule, which they should. But I think there's more unintended consequences from that, because now you're going to have all the rumors going and the negative recruiting element, which is a reality of, hey, this coach is going to leave. this coach is going to take an NFL job, which is then all of a sudden going to begin the domino effect. So I think that's going to happen. And the biggest issue I had with it is one that I got to experience with a young man that I got to know pretty well in the quarterback space, where he got squeezed by a school to sign December 20th. And he had an opportunity to go to a bigger school if he waited, potentially. And he didn't get that opportunity to wait. So I think so much shuffling usually happened the night before the February signing day, because people would commit somewhere, and then all of a sudden a big school would open up a roster spot, and they would swoop in and allow a kid to get to his dream school. Now, that crushes Oregon States of the world, because that's happened to them.
Yep.
We used to do it at UCLA all the time when I was at SC. So I do think that for everybody, they could probably got a different issue with it. But overall, the premise, I like it. But there are, I think, a lot of unintended consequences that have come from this, and I think they're just probably getting started as official visits begin in April.
Now, I saw you when you were providing your analysis with Mike Yam and Anthony Heron. You know, and when it comes to quarterbacks with the Elite Eight camps, that's kind of your wheelhouse. And, of course, the Pac-12 is a QB-happy league. So you really think this is a special class of quarterbacks. What pops about that that makes you think so?
Yeah, I think it's the best class in the last decade. And I know what I'm saying when I say that. It sounds crazy, but we went back and did the work and literally looked at every class from 2007 to now, and not a lot of players started two games or more throughout that entire time period. I mean, the largest group was 9 players who started 2 games or more, and that was in 2009. We're talking about like Cody Vaz at Oregon State, who started 2 or more games, but he also wasn't the starter. You know, there was an injury that year. So I don't think the talent is anywhere near with what it is now. And I think we saw last year on a big stage with Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, and Jake Fromm as two true freshmen and a true sophomore playing the national title game, that quarterbacks are getting way better in high school. You know, the offenses are changing in college. They're upgrading in high school. The training, the 7-on-7 game has all impacted it. And I look at this class, I think there's 9 quarterbacks that are going to start for their school at some point. And 3 quarterbacks went to 1 school at UW. So that number might be 10 or 11 based on how they space out in years if all of them end up panning out. So I just think they're gifted. I think you've got a variety of different skill sets, from JT Daniels being the top quarterback, Tyler Shuck being a guy who will sit for a little bit, Jared Goff's capability, tendencies, he'll remind you of him. Jack Tuttle kind of remind you of Matt Ryan of the Falcons going to Utah, their best recruit, I think, in the history of their program at the quarterback position. And then Jacob Eason transfers into UW, obviously, you know, his resume from his freshman year at Georgia, throwing for over 2,000 yards, speaks for itself.
Talking with Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network, I also saw on the show last night rave reviews for Chip Kelly's new quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who won the Nevada State title at Bishop Gorman. How hotly pursued was this young guy, and how do you like the fit with he and Coach Kelly?
I love it. I mean, there were so many great stories. I mean, we were joking about it after our show, is that could have gone for 3 more hours. I mean, it's one of those, it's like when you call a game, you have so much in the tank that you want to talk about, which is why I love doing shows like this to tell stories. And DTR, which is what he goes by, is one of those. This is a young man who played wide receiver as a sophomore and junior in high school. The quarterback ahead of him was a guy named Tate Martell, who's now at Ohio State, had never lost a game of anything, 7-on-7, regular season football, and was kind of the first social media high school quarterback, kind of the branded guy, because they were so good at such a big high school in Nevada, as you referenced, in Las Vegas. And Dorian, he easily could have transferred. He was offered at Michigan, UCLA, a dozen or more schools prior to even playing a snap at quarterback and being a starting quarterback in high school. And there were a lot of people that told him to leave. And a lot of high school players, we see it all the time, you see it all the time, they're transferring now. They're transferring to go play because they don't want to sit. They don't want to sit and learn and grow. And I think football is the greatest team sport because you have to deal with adversity as a team. And when you deal with that individually, you can make your team better. This guy didn't bail. He said, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to stick with it. Him and his mom and his grandma, they talked about it. And he did what nobody else does in the high school space, specifically at a place like that. And I love that element of him. And then when you watch him play, he moves like Russell Wilson, but he's not 5'11". This guy's 6'2". He's going to be 210 by the time he gets to his freshman year. He can throw the ball over the all over the yard. He's extremely raw, and he's gone through some adversity even playing. I mean, this team started 1-2, and his first three games are on ESPN2. You know, the whole world getting to watch him on a Friday night. So I think that he's walking into a great situation. I think Chip Kelly will force him into the fold a little bit. I don't think he's going to have to start day one, but he's going to be the future, I think, of that program at quarterback.
Fantastic. Let's get to Oregon. You know, stability was a staple here for the coaching staff. Now, all of a sudden, third head coach in 14 months. Yet, you know, the class is ranked pretty high. What's been the buzz about, you know, despite the fact they had to play their bowl game during a critical recruiting period, that Coach Cristobal and his staff kind of grinded it out and pulled off what looks like a nice class?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, another unintended consequence, you know, you have a bowl game as they did in the Las Vegas Bowl and you lose out on a huge recruiting weekend. You know, I would love the NCAA to say you can bring your recruit to that bowl game or make it on a Thursday so then you can actually have a recruiting weekend. Because imagine if they played in the Pac-12 championship and maybe had a poor record and had to play in that bowl game, which could in some random circumstance happen, then you're totally hosed and you get one official visit weekend prior to that early signing period. So hopefully that changes. But speaking of their class, really impressed with this staff in general. And you look at what Mario did first and foremost. He got his staff to stick around. I mean, to me, that's really big time when you look at Marcus Arroyo having the opportunity to go to Florida State and be a big-time coordinator there. You look at the rest of the staff, obviously Jim Leavitt, Keith Hayward, Joe Salavea, Michael Johnson. I mean, these are guys that obviously could have bailed. And the people that they added to that, Dante Williams, you know, he's going to crush it. In my eyes, recruiting Jim Mastro to get him. Court Dennison, he's a star. Bobby Williams, we all know him from Michigan State era. So first and foremost, he kept a really nice nucleus together and then added to that. And then player-wise, God, I think there's instant impact players, and the biggest beneficiary is probably going to be Justin Herbert. You know, he's got two receivers that they got yesterday that I think are going to be extremely legit, and Jalen Hall and Isaiah Crocker. I love their skill set. I love their ability. Jalen Hall's been in the spotlight since he was in eighth grade when he started getting offers. Isaiah Crocker, his arms, it's like they go down to their knees when you watch him play. Really excited about those guys. And the future, to me, Tyler Shuck is going to be that. I'm so high on him character-wise, as a personality, as a competitor. I think he's a star, and he's going to be able to do what I wished every high school quarterback could do, which is sit when they get to college. So when he plays, he's going to crush it. And I think this program is on the verge of really getting back into the national scene. And unfortunately, probably for them, UW has taken such a big jump that it's not going to be like it was a couple years ago in the Pac-12 North.
Yep.
But they're getting going.
Nah, UW versus Oregon, though, when they're both good, it's great for everybody, I think. Lastly, I can't let you go without talking about the USC haul. Two straight solid years under Coach Helton. I think only Clemson and Georgia had more 5-stars. When you look at this class, what jumps off the page? I mean, I guess, according to most services, they're ranked right around the top 5.
It's legit. I think this and UW's class are two classes that can win a national championship and really compete against the Bamas, against, you know, Clemson, Ohio State, Penn State. They're big time players. The players are in a couple different molds. Offensively, SC's always going to do it. JT Daniels reclassifies, leaves after his junior year in high school. He's going to be able to compete for the starting job. Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think he's the best receiver to go to the Pac-12 since DeSean Jackson when he went to Cal. He's a freak. This guy is going to dominate in a huge, huge way in my eyes. In the secondary, getting Elijah Griffith, Isaac Taylor-Stewart yesterday were big. The safety, who I know you know, Talanoa Fufanga out of Corvallis, they've already had rave reviews from the strength and conditioning staff for being a mid-year enrollee at the safety position. And then the linebacker spot, the best class since Cushing, Clay Matthews, Ray Malunga, Kaluka Maeva. They bring in Palliad Goteote. They bring in just some gifted players at the backer position. Anei Mauga. They get a guy, obviously, yesterday out of Modern Day, another absolute star at the linebacker position. So I really think this is a big-time class. I mean, no BS, no just stars and ranking. I mean, they can play at some major positions of need, and as well as positions where they have some depth. You know, these receivers, they brought in some big, big-time playmakers. They don't really have to play. It's going to make that position group and finally have competitive depth, which, in my opinion, is the number one thing that allows you to compete for a CFT spot, because guys are going to get hurt. They're going to go down. Do you have the skill set and the competitiveness to make practice so hard that if they are thrust into a game, they don't flinch? And I think SC, in their last two classes, UW, their last two classes, they've done that in the Pac-12.
You got to be careful when you mention DeSean Jackson and Eugene. He had two games his last couple of years here. I think gives fans still a little bit of a nervous twitch. But, folks, he's a Yogi Roth, author, filmmaker, ace analyst for the Pac-12 Network. Keep up if you can on Twitter. Use the handle at Yogi Roth. Always a pleasure, Yogi. You be well, and I look forward to catching up soon.
Yeah, I love talking to you, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take it easy.